All right. Good morning. Does that, anyone here know how WordPress users say hi to each other? Wait, who got it? Howdy, that's correct. I asked that question once before, and people said everything from hi to hey to hello world, which I thought was a good guess, but no, it's howdy. It's on every screen in the WordPress admin, so you should know that. So I'm Mark, and I'm here to talk about the intersection of two of my favorite topics, WordPress and making money. So I'd like to get to know you a little bit and see where you're at here. So how many of you are earning 10% or more of your income from WordPress consulting? Okay, how about 50% or more? 75? Some full-timers? Just one there. One, two, three, four. Okay, great. So, how many of you have like a 9-to-5 job that's not WordPress related and then you do WordPress on the side? A lot of you. Excellent. And did anyone not raise their hand? Are any of you not doing WordPress consulting at all? So, could one of you speak up? What's your interest? Great. All right. So some of my goals for this talk are to talk about what I do, share how I got here, give you some tips on WordPress consulting, outline some pitfalls, and hopefully get some of you to consider going full-time. So I'm Mark Jaquith. My title is lead developer for WordPress, so I'm one of the five. I'm not employed by Automattic. It's a common misconception. So I don't work on WordPress.com. I do development for WordPress.org. So that's not a paid position. I make my money from doing consulting. So why do I do it? We'll get to that later. So my background, I was homeschooled, didn't finish high school, didn't get a GED, sort of bounced around between universities and colleges, switched majors a few times, and dropped out to do this. Sort of a badge of honor, actually. I have no formal training on anything relating to computers. My majors were business and biology and did chemistry and... So this is not like, I'm not one of those CS guys. I sort of stumbled into this. So in about 2003, I wanted to, write and publish on the web. So I started a blog, and I was using MovableType early on. And I'm a bit of a tweaker. I like to sort of control my environment. So in early 2004, I bought a book on PHP. Around mid-2004, I was sort of unhappy with MovableType and started researching my options and settled on WordPress. So in about, I think, May, I wrote my first WordPress hack before I even moved to the system. And this was before plugins. We had something called hacks where you actually modified core WordPress files, which you can imagine is a big pain when you upgrade as you have to do it all over again. So about 2 days after that, I migrated everything to WordPress. Felt very much at home. I fairly immediately became involved in the plugin community. I started writing plugins, and I started submitting core patches to WordPress. Also around that time, maybe a couple months after I switched, I started doing WordPress consulting. 2004 was what we call the year of the mass exodus from MovableType to WordPress. Anyone here switched in 2004? A couple of you. Well, WordPress has grown a lot since then, but at the time it was a massive event. If you search Google Trends for WordPress and MovableType, you'll see sort of crisscrossing lines in opposite directions, and the crisscross was right there in mid 2004 when they announced their pricing model for MovableType 3. So I came in with that wave. So WordPress was rising. A lot of people were switching. And I realized, you know, I was sort of good at it, and I enjoyed it. So I was still in school at the time, but I figured, you know, beer money, I can start doing consulting here. A few months later, I got community recognition in WordPress as what we called a bug gardener. We sort of created a position. At the time, there were only two lead developers. So it sort of created a bottleneck because they couldn't go through all these patches. So me and this other guy were made into bug gardeners, and we would sort of just take the bugs, the patches that other people submitted, and figure out which ones were good, separate the wheat from the chaff, and send the good ones up to Matt and Ryan to put into the core. And in about 2006, I was still in school. I realized, you know, I was good at this. I liked doing it a lot. And I was actually making what at the time I thought was really decent money. So I decided to, you know, jump in with both feet. I dropped out of school and I've been doing WordPress consulting full-time since then. And then later in 2006, I gained commit access to WordPress and became one of the now 5 lead developers. So, I'd like to talk about making the leap. For people, those of you who are in a 9-to-5 and are just doing WordPress on the side, or maybe people who are in a different career path, you know, something completely unrelated to this and are just dabbling. I know it's scary to think about leaving an established career or an existing job and sort of jumping into this new thing. And really the only advice I can say is at some point you just need to get over that fear, because there's never going to be a point in time where all your doubts go away and it becomes a really safe choice. And if you wait that long, you've missed the train. So you're never going to have that perfect time. So don't be waiting for it. I definitely get your significant other, mine over there, okay with this idea. It's good for your relationship. It's also good to good for you, because you're going to have to explain it to them in a way that makes sense. And so it's going to, you know, it used to be just this idea in your head. Now you have to actually explain in an objective way that makes sense. And that's going to help you think through it as well. Reading material, I definitely recommend the 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss. Not everything applies, but it's more of an attitude changer. You know, definitely don't read this and think that you're going to be working 4 hours a week. It's more of just changing your frame of reference. And I would say set a financial goal for the part-time work you're doing on WordPress. To sort of figure out what level, if done full-time, could keep you off the streets. Don't try and wait for, you know, a level where you could match your current income. Again, that's going to take a lot longer. And you should probably jump in before then. And then just do it. When you jump in, go at it full bore. I would recommend finding a niche and just completely owning that niche. You can get maybe generic theming work done for probably as low as $20 an hour. One of my niches is security review. So I go through plugins and themes that other people have written and make sure they're completely secure. So big organizations want to make sure that before they deploy stuff, it's A-okay. And I charge up to $200 an hour. So it's a factor of 10, just because it's a really specific and specialized part of it. Actually, funny story, I got into the security aspects because I was sitting in a church many years back, and I've been working on WordPress earlier in the day, and I had some of that code in my head. I was just sitting in church, sort of bored, and running that code through my head, and I found a bug, like a big, giant security bug, whereby anyone who was registered could make themselves an administrator, if I was right. So I sort of rushed home and verified that, and it was, in fact, true. So that's how we got WordPress 2.0.3. So I just sort of took it from there. I found I was sort of good at finding those sorts of problems. And that's what you should do. You should try and stand out from the crowd. There are tens upon tens of thousands of people who are going to list WordPress as a skill. What does that even mean to anyone? I say WordPress, it could mean that you know how to use it. It could mean that you can make a basic theme. It could mean you're a hardcore plugin developer. Could mean you're doing scaling, and those are very, very different pay scales. So you should find something. So say if you're an expert in RSS or Atom feed customizations, go after that. If you're a designer and you're really good at making video blog templates, go after that and list that and try and, I mean, you can do other stuff, but you should specialize and try and get to the point where other people say about you, yeah, he or she is the expert in this part of it. So rates, what do you charge people? Is Judy Breck here in the room? She's probably in the education track. She's one of my earliest clients, way back in 2004 or 5. I charged her $20 an hour. So at first, charge what you can get. Charge what people will pay you. I'd recommend finding like a medium or medium to big name blogger on WordPress and work for them on the cheap at first. And then just gently ask them to give you a shout out. You can sort of bootstrap a lot by word of mouth and reputation from someone who's well respected as a blogger and other bloggers would look to when they're in similar situations. Ask them for advice and then they can point to you. So that'll get you out there. When you start to get a reasonably steady flow of requests, start increasing your rates. I would say increase them until about 50% of people start hesitating because of the cost. You don't want to be in the situation where you give them your rate quote and everyone goes, great, when do we start? Because that's too low. So don't sell yourself short and don't be afraid to ask for more. Really, the only fair price is the one you both agree upon. And if they're agreeing upon it without any hesitation, it's too low. I have an anecdote. I was at a client. I was charging them at this time $40 an hour. They voluntarily, I sent them a bill, and they said, great, that looks great. We'd like to start paying you $70 an hour, which is a 75% raise, voluntarily. They said, because they were afraid that they thought I was undercharging. They're afraid that someone was going to scoop me up full time and they were going to lose me. So don't be that guy. That's really embarrassing to find out that I could have been charging 75% more, probably more than that, since that's what they gave willingly. So if you get booked up and you're still getting requests, where you would have to turn stuff down. Raise your rates. Every time you get booked up and you get more requests, that means you need to raise your rates. It's supply and demand. The worst, it can be a little scary to raise your rates because it's sort of you're putting out there a valuation of yourself that you may not be comfortable with yet. You haven't sort of grown into that. The worst is that they say, no thanks, that's too expensive. But they're thinking about you, well, okay, he's charging that. Other people must be paying that. He's worth that. And they may come back to you later, or they may recommend you to other people with deeper pockets. Well, technically, that's not the worst that can happen. I once had a guy, he told me he was having outsourcing some work to India for like $15 an hour, and he was really disappointed in the quality of work, for $15 an hour. So I gave him a quote, and it was probably more towards like, 10 times that. And he wrote back, it was ridiculous that anyone would be charging that. No one will pay that. And so I sort of fumed about that for a couple minutes and wrote back, hope you best of luck. Hope you find your happy medium. And I addressed it to Goldilocks and signed it Papa Bear. So if you get reasonably booked up and you've raised your rates, if you start getting low ballers like that, people who just have no idea what you're currently worth, I had people who would waste a lot of time where we'd talk about the project. I'd be like, this is how I do it. It's been like, an hour or so. sort of describing the project for them, and we get to rates, and they'd be no go. I at that point, I would publish your rates on your website, and you should have a website that runs WordPress, showing off your plugins or your themes or whatever it is that you do. So publish your rates, but publish them like 25 to 50% higher than you're actually quoting people. If people still contact you, that means they passed the seriousness test. They may not be okay with your rates. In fact, I would recommend that's the price you quote on your website, but when people contact you, quote them the actual rate, you know, the one that's, you know, minus that 25 to 50%. This makes them feel like they're getting a deal, even though it's actually your real rate. But it's a nice little psychological trick to make people go for it. Whereas if that was the rate you quoted, they might try and even argue you down from that. You should, when you get booked up, you should pick your clients. Don't get into the mindset where you have to accept everything that comes your way. If you have a client who is, first of all, do you do hourly or per project? That's something I wrestle on. I sort of flip back and forth. And I found it's best to play it by ear. Some people need a budget, especially like companies. They have a budget. They need to go to a manager or supervisor and say, this is how much this project is going to cost. And definitely for, you know, flat rates like that, inflate it like 50% beyond what you think it's going to take, especially if it's a new client. You don't know how they're going to interact with you. You might have the client who sort of keeps coming back and sort of adding little things that aren't enough for you to say, no, that's outside the scope. But those little things just keep adding up, and the project's taken, you know, 25 to 50% longer than you thought. So I would say with a new client, start with a small flat rate project. Don't jump into like a giant 2-month project without knowing how they're going to interact with you. And so if you get a client and you give them that test flat rate project, and you find that they are adding those things to you, for the next project, either try and convince them to go hourly, or just raise the rate that you quote them for that flat rate project. Just pick a price that it would be worth it for you to do all the extra work and answer all those emails you know they're going to send. And, you know, let them choose. You don't have to necessarily drop them unless they're really bad and there's no price. So, yeah. You should establish trust and set expectations with clients in terms of, like, communication frequency. Communication methods. Don't give everyone your phone number if you aren't okay answering it. And it may be that, you know, some clients, you're okay giving them your phone number because, you know, they're only going to call you for an actual emergency. Don't bite off more than you can chew. When you're going to have, like, your first big fish client, and you're just going to, you know, you can give them the quote, they're going to be okay with it, and you're just going to be, wow, I can't believe I'm getting this. It's easy to get overwhelmed, to get dragged under with that first big fish. So I would say if it's significantly bigger, more than, you know, 25 to 50% bigger than anything you've done before, you just ease into it. You know, don't be afraid of saying no. It's a very empowering word once you get okay with it. You're not going to hurt their feelings, especially if you know other WordPress developers or themers, and you can refer them to them if you know that they're a bigger firm and they can handle it, and that can also establish trust with that other firm and get them sending you projects that are more your style. Pick projects that excite you. If I find a project that's super exciting, I'll give a very steep discount because I have a lot more fun, and I'm actually more productive on fun projects. And even at like a half rate, it can be worth it because I get twice more done. I'm not, you know, sitting here pinching my cheeks in frustration. So, what if you're already doing this, part-time or even full-time, and you just want to, become a rock star, become the WordPress ninja? I would suggest becoming involved with the WordPress community. It's sort of weird. There are a lot of WordPress developers out there that I've never heard of, and they're doing lots of work. But I've never heard of them. I'm not referring any work to them. And then they're sort of not getting the benefit of that community. The community can be a great bootstrapper in terms of the personal relationships you forge, and also in terms of getting your name out in front of a lot of the WordPress influencers. You can send you a ton of business. Release free plugins or themes. So if you're a plugin developer, it doesn't have to be even a complicated plugin. If you write a 10-line plugin that saves everyone 15 minutes, you're going to be a hero to them, and they're going to remember your name. They're going to think of you. But it would be good to have sort of one sort of like your magnum opus plugin. So you can say, when people say, okay, so what plugins have you done? You can say that one and be reasonably sure they've heard of it. So put your effort behind that, and then just have a whole bunch of small but useful plugins. And if you're doing themes, you're a theme developer, release free themes. Who here has heard of the Revolution theme? Probably 25, 30 people. So that's Brian. And so just because he released that theme, he made it free, all of you have heard of him. So learn from that. Blog about WordPress. Blog about how you solved a particular problem. Blog about how everyone else is doing X completely wrong and how you know the best way to do it. It can help establish you as an authority. There are WordPress mailing lists, WordPress hackers list. It's not as scary and evil as it sounds. It's for tinkers, mostly. Participate in that when you have something productive to say. There's a site called CodePoet, which is it's a site that automatic maintains. It's a list of WordPress developers and themers. So go to CodePoet.com and get yourself listed on there. And that's another place where Specialty really helps you. I think I'm still the only person on there listed as doing security, and I got a lot of referrals from that. When you find a bug in WordPress, open a track ticket, submit a patch. You improve the patches that other people put in. These are things that will get you on my radar, on Matt's radar, the radar of people in Automatic, and that can really help your star rise. And reach out to prominent members of the community. Whether it's someone who's a core developer or someone you respect who does plugins or themes, something similar to you, or even something that's on the other side. I like to forge relationships with people like Lisa, who do themes, because I don't do themes, so it's good for me to have someone who can, I can refer to, and she can refer people to me for hardcore plugin or security stuff. So contact these people, ask them how you can help with WordPress, and let them know what you do and sort of build up that relationship. Finally, speak at WordCamps. I spend money on plane tickets and food and hotel, but I always make it up. I meet people, and it may not even be immediately, but 3 months, 6 months down the line, hey, I saw you talk at WordPress or WordCamp about this. I'd like to do a project with you. And don't wait for an invitation. You just have to, when you see one in an area or see one that you like to attend, suggest yourself as a speaker. So keeping sharp. Monitor WordPress's development. Keep up with that so you know where it's headed. You know about the newest features. You know about the newest best practices and the best ways to do things. Don't get stuck in a rut. This applies to plugin developers and themers as well. don't just settle on something, whether this is, you know, using Apache to run WordPress and thinking that's the end all, or you know, only testing on Firefox, or you know, if you're a themer, you know, staying away from JavaScript, you know, sort of expand your horizons. One of my recent ones was Apache. For the longest time, I thought Apache is all anyone ever needs to serve websites, and then I found Nginx, and it's sort of blown my mind what you can do with that performance-wise. So, just stay out there, keep stay hungry, and keep learning, and watch for emerging micro communities. So the previous presentation was about BuddyPress. BuddyPress really didn't exist more than a year ago, except as a name, but it just exploded in the last year. Probably. I'd say more than 60% of my income this year is not on BuddyPress per se, but on projects that had a BuddyPress component. So just learning that skill, I mean, taking a week and getting sharp on that, you know, has improved my prospects immeasurably. So BuddyPress, BBPress, learn these things, and then look for the next one. We're trying to promote a new concept called canonical plugins, where instead of having a whole bunch of competing solutions that, you know, we don't endorse, we sort of encourage developers to group together and put their efforts towards. So BuddyPress would be the canonical social networking plugin. So watch for those to get started up. I'd say probably in the next year, those are going to become really big. So watch for the next BuddyPress. Get on board early. Again, if it's a niche skill, you can charge a premium for that. So, what's your end game? How does this all play out? You could stay a consultant. You're gonna run out of hours in the day at some point and run out of big fish clients and just about getting there. So you could at that point outsource, hire, you know, form a bigger studio. That Nick back there? CNP Studios. You guys actually still call yourselves CNP, or is it Voce now? It's Voce now. So they got so big that they got acquired. So that's one route. You could do the Andy Peetling route, lead dev of BuddyPress. He was, well, you know, freelance consultant like me. He had to do a site that required social features, so we sort of developed the seed of BuddyPress, and he released it as a free plugin. Good move. Got on Automattic's radar, and now they hired him, and he does that full-time as his job. So he transitioned into pretty much probably a dream job for a plugin developer. But there are other companies as well. New York Times has a few people here. They have WordPress people. A lot of the, you know, we say old media or established media companies are getting into web publishing, and especially with the recession, people are looking to WordPress more and more, because there's zero cost of licensing. You'd be surprised what companies, big media companies, are paying. Six figures, they don't even bat an eye per year on licensing. It just gets them the right to use the software. So WordPress is actually doing expanding in the recession because of that benefit. So you might get snatched up by a company like that. Or you could start like a WordPress-related service company. You could be like the next Akismet. If you can find some need in your travels through WordPress that is unfulfilled and is more of a something that a service could provide instead of just a quick plugin fix, like Akismet, which has to be a service because if they publish the rules, all the spammers would know how to get around them. So, yeah. That's one of the other end games there. So that is all I have. Thank you. How about some questions?
Okay. Do you have any advice for most of my clients I work with I've never met? Do you have any advice for working remotely with clients?
I would just be very honest and open with them, even on your site. about who you are, what kind of person you are, you know, where you live. Some people are uncomfortable if you exist in the ether, out in the internet. Say, you know, I live in small town USA. Here's my face. It sort of established that those personal. Yeah, okay. That's why. So, you know, establish that personal, connection. It can be good to talk on the phone, not just over email, to sort of, you can learn a lot, too, not just, getting them to trust you, but you getting a feel with how the interaction's going to go. If they're deep enough pockets, have them fly you out there to, consult on it, but most of the time, over the phone and pictures and just sort of those personal details, that helps. Other questions?
You're networking with plugin developers. See the domain attachment. What percent of people actually donate on a pretty good plugin and feel like it's a worthwhile endeavor with people doing very well from it, or is it kind of?
I doubt anyone is, to take my title, feeding their family with plugin donations. It's mostly beer money. I think I could probably do better if I had maybe like in the options page of the plugins, there was like some plugin developers have a little box where they say, if you enjoy this plugin, here's the donate link, as opposed to just being in the README or on the WordPress plugin download page where it's just a tiny little link. That might help. But mostly what you're going to get the benefit from is people who see that plugin and want you to do another plugin, or people who want you to customize that plugin for their needs. And I'd make sure you let people know, on your website, here's this plugin. If you want me to make it better, more suited to your environment, here's where you can contact me.
In the plugin theme competition, one of the things that was mentioned was that whatever was contributed, it should just be get somebody to buy something else. What if this something else is the premium model? I'm asking not so much for your contribution, but with how you see the community and how the community feels about people that are doing plugin development. If it's the premium model where the base level of service is functional, it's great, but there's premium.
I get uncomfortable. Can you hear the questions, or should I repeat? Can't hear. The question is, how do I feel about the freemium model where you give sort of a base plugin and then you're trying to upsell people to the full version?
We're upselling bandwidth.
Selling bandwidth.
So okay. You can get the whole thing yourself.
Okay. I get uncomfortable when people would do like a free GPL, WordPress license compliant plugin and then try and upsell to a proprietary. That's sort of shady. If you're trying to upsell to maybe a more, the model is more, you're selling not the plugin so much, although you can under the GPL charge for code, you're more charging for the service. And so you're telling them, I'm going to support this for you, or I'm going to give you more features like bandwidth and those sorts of things. Or it could be the, if it's more of a service that requires bandwidth and those sorts of things, it can be like a Kismet where plugin is completely free, and then you have service level tiers for providing that service. So Kismet is free to probably most of you, but if you're a pro blogger, then you pay like $50 a year or something like that. We're okay with that. We're definitely okay with like upselling services and stuff like that. Where I get uncomfortable is where people develop a plugin and then just release a severely handicapped version, like one that feels like its only purpose is to get you to upgrade. That sort of seems shady and not a good way to get people to trust you. So, but I'm okay with like the idea of having, two versions, both GPL, one just more simple. So don't say handicapped, as it's like, features are cut in half, but just simplified to the down to the core. That's pretty good. Lisa.
Kind of along the lines of the same, as a consultant, you or anybody in the room are doing plugin development, team development, kind of along the same lines, how do you feel, one, about if your client wants to release your work, but what do you think is or two, how do you feel you want to release what you've developed for them? So they come to you and ask you to develop your company, get to their website. You can totally see you would, you know, benefit from having that. As a consultant, how do you deal with that detail?
Okay, question is, you develop work for a client, you know, it's WordPress derivative, so it's GPL. How do you feel if they want to release it, or how do they feel if you want to release it publicly? I'm okay with clients wanting to release it publicly. In fact, I often push for it and encourage it. Several core features in WordPress, the ability to have more than like 5,000 users. We used to display the users page, one page. It wasn't there's no search, there's no pagination, so it crapped how to use about 8 megabytes per 5,000 users. And I wrote the pagination for a client. And I said, you know what, if you let me put this into WordPress core, I don't have to keep applying these hacks every time we upgrade. And they like that, because I couched it in terms of reducing future billable hours. And that's oftentimes the tack I'll use. I'll tell them, look, you could keep paying me to maintain this, or we could set it free, and other people will maintain it free of charge, and they like that. Yes?
What do you feel about, let's say you create a free plugin, and you want to create one that's for a theme or a plugin that you charge for, how do you go about, is there the using API fee or something? Like, how do you go about keeping that from maybe somebody else saying, oh, I'm just going to publish it?
Well, it has to be GPL licensed. So if the API, if all the code is there, an API key is not, and it seems like an artificial hurdle, unless it is actually a service that requires, like, a Kismet. Honestly, I haven't seen much. There are several plugins out now that have a light version that is freely downloadable, and then you pay and you get support and access to the pro version. And I really haven't seen instances of people, because the benefit is really in the service. So I would just, make your website just very strong and say, this is it, this is where you get the service, this is the source for it. And generally, this is like with, this is technically not piracy, but, when people are getting something for free that they could be paying for, it's usually not the people who are going to be considering paying for it anyway. It's the tinkerers who just want to play.
I was curious if there was anything people tended to build to kind of keep it, lock it down in a relay.
They do.
Yeah,
some people do lock down the proprietary ones, but that's very much against the license to obfuscate it and make it like all encrypted. Way in the back.
Thanks. Recently, I had a design studio contact me for an estimate to actually build out a theme for them. They're going to be the ones to design it, and I would be the one building it out and everything. And I was just wondering, what range would that normally be charged for? I gave them an estimate, and they came back and said, like, oh, we could. Our part of the budget for it's only about $1,500, like a little bit more to $1,800, and that seemed kind of low to me. And I don't know what else other people are charging. What everyone in the audience, like, what are
yeah?
What are
let's open it up. Who's doing theme work? Was it like a basic theme, or did it require like an options page and a bunch of JavaScript and
well, that stuff? I mean, that's the thing. She pretty much gave the stipulation that it would definitely have to work with the video player plugin, and I sent back questions asking, do you want other types of plugins and widgets, like any kind of social media or anything else like that? And she didn't really answer my question, but, what it comes down to is that they're willing to pay up to $1,800 for it, just from my part of, like, doing the CSS and the page templates and everything. And to me, I think that seems a little bit low, but I don't know what else is.
How much work do you think it is? How long would it take?
I'm sorry, what?
How long do you think it would take?
I mean, I'm thinking it's probably like 20 to 30 hours of work once you count in meeting times and everything too, and email, and back and forth, and then me also doing the custom install and things like that. And mind you, I wouldn't be doing the design. I'll be switching the design over to CSS and XHTML,
okay.
and making the custom page templates.
So Lisa would probably be the high end of this. What would you charge for that ballpark?
Based on what you described, you've got two different aspects of your project. You've got the consulting, the email, and the meeting time,
yeah.
and things like that. And then you've got the actual security.
Yeah.
CSS stuff that you're doing. Probably something like that would be easier to charge out on an hourly basis.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever your hourly rate would be, something like that, and then I would add it out for that. Okay. Email, whatever you're doing,
yeah.
and then break it down to them, how much time it's taking you to do it.
Okay.
So, you know, what they're talking about, 1,800, 2,200, it could be some ballpark, or you're not doing any of the design work,
yeah.
you're doing the CSS, you're doing the CSS, you know, the WordPress functionality portion of it.
Yeah.
I would say that 1,800, 2,200 is a good part of that feature.
Yeah.
How much time you're spending training them, teaching them, consulting with them, that's what you're able to score, because that, those kind of hours can take so free.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You might also consider with some clients, yeah, you bill them for the project, and then you'd say, you create like a support package, where you could, a great thing to do is have like a retainer agreement where they pay you some amount per month, and you're just available to answer questions about it. That can be a good way to do it. When is the next session? I don't want to run over my time. It is 11. I have until 11? All right, we have 1 minute, so maybe one more question.
Oh, I was just going to offer just on that.
Oh, yeah.
I think also to figure out how flexible the client is. So like if they have a very specific design and they want it to look exactly like that, that's a little different than them saying, I want it to look basically like this. Like depending how strict they need to be, I think you just have to control where, you know, how what you're going to charge them.
I would just throw on that if what you're doing is somewhat reusable, or if you can negotiate in the ability to reuse the theme that you develop, you know, maybe not make it freely downloadable so that there's thousands of the same version out there. But if like you're serving a niche market of video wedding videographers or something like that, that you can then go out to that market, and then next time you can kind of take that and tweak it, but still charge $1,200 for something that took you 5 hours, then you know there's upside value there too.
Yeah, that's a good point. You sort of develop a personal library. Don't develop every theme from scratch. Get like sort of a basic theme framework, or use one of the existing ones to build your themes. And that way, a quote like that may be no problem because half of it's already done. All right, I think that is about it. Thank you so much.